Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's telephone conference of Allianz SE on the publication of the results for the third quarter 2017. For your information, this conference will be taped. At this point, I would like to hand over to Thomas Atkins. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the media conference of Allianz Group. I'm the head, Thomas Atkins, head of financial communication, and as always, on the third quarter, our CFO, Dieter Wemmer, will guide you through the results and then be available for your questions. We have time until 9:30 to answer your questions. Mr. Wemmer, the floor is yours.
Thank you, and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'll gladly guide you through the results of the third quarter, and I hope you've had the opportunity to take a look into our presentation, which we published on the internet yesterday evening. I would guide you through the presentation, starting on the first slide with an overview of the nine-month figures, and then we'll take a deeper look into the third quarter. If I may start with an overview, the third quarter was relatively boring when it comes to news because it pretty much continued the development of the first and second quarter. The developments that were shaped in the first and second quarter were also reflected in the third, with the difference that in the third quarter, there were the hurricanes and two earthquakes in Mexico. You've read about this, of course, in the news, and this is our business to then pay the claims arising from this. Other than that, the story's been more or less unchanged. We have 8.4 billion for the operating profit after nine months, still 3.5% above the previous year, clearly driven by Life, Health, and Asset Management, and we'll hear more about this in detail later on. Property casualty, of course, was affected by the natural catastrophes, and therefore weaker than in the previous year. I think the nine-month figures with a 95% combined ratio, if you have this as the second-largest P&C underwriter in the world, then you've done a lot of things right, I think. Let's look into the third quarter. Our revenues are the large difference to the previous year was in P&C. In Life, we've been around 100 million weaker than in the previous year, but we had positive one-off effects last year, realized gains, and we restructured our bond portfolio and therefore removed certain risks. Also from the United States, we had a higher rating result at the time, but of course, these are volatile, so I don't see any deviation to the previous year. I think that the result in Life is even really free of any one-off effects and therefore reflects that we're well on track when it comes to the development in Life, Health. Now, looking at shareholders' equity, 65 billion is our IFRS equity, a little higher than in the previous half of the year. You have to consider that we continue our share buyback program, and therefore, this needs to be weighed against shareholders' equity, which brings me directly to our Solvency II ratio, 227%. That is clearly a new record for us. Our internal management ratio is between 180% and 220%, and that is also the reason why we've decided to announce a further share buyback program with the Q3 figures, which we decided yesterday in the evening and then announced in an ad hoc statement. 2 billion further share buyback, that amounts to 6.6 percentage points less approximately. We'll be at our 220% target ratio. The message is not to be that we'll cut off anything that goes above 220, but we'll take a close look at how the ratio will develop further, Solvency II ratio, how the liquidity situation of the company plays out, and for which opportunities we need to provide capital and liquidity. The 2 billion, we believe, are well used for a further share buyback program. Coming to the next page, here you can see all the technical changes in the solvency ratio. We still have a strong surplus production, especially through the life health business. The fact is that our new business mix uses up less risk capital than the old mix we used to have. Therefore, below in this box, you can see business evolution, and you can see that in spite of growth in health, we earn up less risk capital, and P&C is also included here. That is to say that risk, when it comes to the risk point of view, we've reshaped our portfolio in life, and the new business value of life is also good, and this is then also reflected in positively in the own funds. In addition to this, we had some management actions. The market impact brought us a little plus in the quarter. Overall, that led to a strong improvement of the solvency ratio. Now coming to our P&C business. 2.2% internal growth. I believe in many countries we are well on track, but what we've seen over and over has been in Turkey due to the restrictions and restrictive measures by the Turkish government that we've started to shrink in business. Turkey used to be a very reliable contributor of good growth, but I believe also this will be a passing phase. In markets like these, there are very cyclical movements within the industry. The volume in Italy has continued to decrease, but no longer to the degree as in the previous quarters. I believe we're on a good development path into the right direction. The main growth driver for us remains our global assistance business and the international health business of Allianz Partners. They continue to grow with double-digit figures, and Latin America is also still in the recovery phase, still growing with double-digit figures. That brings me to our operating result in P&C. As I've already mentioned, we have 529 million euros for natural catastrophes that were booked in the third quarter. That contains the three hurricanes, HIM, as they are being abbreviated, so Harvey, Irma, and Maria, and two earthquakes in Mexico, but also two smaller catastrophic events in the German-speaking countries, which are also contained here and also contributed to this. I think it's interesting that after we restructured the Fireman's Fund portfolio, those were above all expensive houses and cars. After we sold that, We also improved our restructured our exposures in the marine sector over the past years, and I believe especially in the hurricane-exposed part of the U.S., we have clearly reduced our risk. And in addition to the relatively low values for the three hurricanes combined, we also have low effects on the reinsurance market with the natural catastrophes. So we're at a good €70 million of losses that we've handed over to the reinsurers. So that is to say that often disregard when it comes to risk management, we've been very cautious, and that will hopefully decouple us from additional price increases of the reinsurers in the next year. So what did the results look like in detail? Well, this is the usual page. You can see the individual countries. So this is more for reading through, and if you have any specific questions, I'll be glad to answer them. But it's obvious that at AGCS, which includes our U.S. business, the combined ratio is now at 113%, and if I split up our AGCS business in between the U.S. and the non-U.S. business, then outside the U.S. we're below 100, but in view of the results, it's no wonder. I mean, you can see the 25 percentage points stem from natural catastrophes. And you can also see in which other markets the results that we had. Why the natural catastrophes in France? Well, simply because of the fact that France also continues. The French also have territories in the Caribbean, and France is not restricted to the European mainland. So that is why we also have influences from Irma and Maria, which were included here. So that brings me to page 17, the investment results from P&C business. Still on a very good level, I'd say. Also, the reinvestment yields in the third quarter are slightly higher than in the previous year. So here you can see that a stabilization seems to be on the horizon. Yet we haven't reached this fully, because if you look at the current yield, what we currently have, so you can see 0.66 for the quarter. Multiply this by 4, so we're at 2.6 on an annual level, compared to a reinvestment yield of 1.7. So there's still a gap, and over the next years there will be a continued decrease of yield. But I think through our investments in other areas than fixed income, because the benchmark comparison is only the fixed interest rate investments, but if you include the alternative investments, you can see that we can keep up the investment result at a good level. Now I'll come to our current top segment. Life health insurance continues its successful course and path of the previous quarters. In new business, the new business continues to grow. The new business margin is well on track, and I believe that here we've created a solid basis which will support us in coming quarters as well. And growth is above all carried by Germany, the Asian room as well, but also France and Italy contribute very well to our success. In the United States, we're a little lower, but if you look at the figure here, the minus 13%, then you have to take into account that the price of the dollar weakened quite a bit over the year. Now, the result in life health, I had already mentioned this in my introductory remarks. The investment margin went down 126 million. All of that stems from the one-off effects of realized gains and rating results last year. Other than that, the result is what I would call very robust and very positive without any extra spend. On the next page, you then see a summary of where the new business turns into a higher value of new business and an operating profit. And here you can see that Germany is still leading here. The United States is our second largest market when it comes to life health, but the third most important market, especially looking at the future, is Asia Pacific. We're in new business with 58 million and 37% growth. We're on a very positive development track. You can almost say that the region, now that it's been freed of Korea, can focus on the dynamic growth markets, and this is now also reflected in the figures. But also our smaller life units have posted very good results. After I complained a little bit about Turkey a few minutes ago, here you can see that the life business is still very positive in Turkey. Page 25, here we have the check whether our interest rate income is still sufficient to pay our guarantees, and I believe the distance, the gap we have here is still very good. If you compare this to the size of our customer obligations, we have a 0.3% investment margin, 1.1% compared to 0.5% of guarantees, so the distance is very good. And if you look at net harvesting, the results from realized gains in the quarter, you can see that we were very low in this quarter, so it was positive a few base points, but not a lot. So therefore you can see that this is a very solid setup we have here. Now, talking about asset management next. We've been on a very positive recovery track, and for the half year we had 1.406 billion, and now we have 7 billion more, and you can see minus 33.7 billion, that's the foreign exchange impact, so the dollar's weakened a bit, and it's taking away quite a bit of this great PIMCO story in our figures here, because PIMCO had 28.9 billion euros in inflows in the third quarter. And also, the October was very positive at PIMCO, so I think there were around $20 billion, or I think it was 18, in inflows, and if I sum up the whole 10 months, we should have reached $125 billion for PIMCO in inflows. And for an actively managed fund in the year 2017, that is an extraordinary result, because figures of this magnitude these days you only find in the large mass asset funds, and not in the passive funds, rather, not in the active ones. But as we are reporting in euros, we have to live with the fact that foreign exchange volatilities and a weaker dollar, in this case, have reduced the figures a bit, or normalized the figures a bit. Page 29. Well, following the large inflows in local currency, we, of course, also have a large increase of our fees. And as we've less performance fees. I'll explain a bit why later on why that it's remained a little flat in Europe. And on page 31, you can see that the result hasn't changed as much. We have 116 million more in revenues from fees, but the performance fees went down 47 million compared to the previous year, and that is not a failure or a surprise in any way, but rather last year at PIMCO, we still had some performance fees in the quarters from a closed fund, which was in repayment, and those were the last fees from this fund, which came in last year, and therefore, this could not be repeated this year. That was obvious beforehand, and the next of this larger funds, which will go in repayment, and there will be one of performance fees that will be, I believe, in the year 2019, and the normal ongoing performance fees. When we look at these, the third quarter at PIMCO is no invoicing quarter, so therefore there are hardly any performance fees that come up in the third quarter. Now looking at expenses, they were slightly higher. Certain one-off costs are contained here, so that unfortunately we can only close the quarter with 590 million in operating profit. And for some, I might say there was great inflows, but only 590 in operating profit. But you have to look at the foreign exchange effects in this case and the one-off effects. And then finally, our corporate segment, no major changes. We were able to save some costs in the holding that made a positive contribution. And other than that, we can come to the last slide of my presentation, which is page 35, the translation of shareholders of operating profit to shareholders' net income. We had a lower tax rate in the third quarter, some realized gains that were tax exempt, and the realized gains are not in the life segment, so that I don't contradict myself. The realized gains posted here were those which stem from PNC or the corporate segment. And that was also relatively low volume. In a historic comparison, therefore, no major change. Then we also had a small release from all the tax provisions, which are no longer needed, as we were able to close these cases positively, and that brings them to the effective tax rate of 28%. Now the last page shows how we stand regarding our ambitions for 2018, and I believe that in all areas we're well on track, and with this I would like to end my presentation and look forward to your questions. Thank you very much, Mr. Vemma. So, could you please give the instructions how to ask questions? Yes, of course. Ladies and gentlemen, in case you want to ask a question, please press the asterisk or star button and the key 1 on your phone. Please make sure that the mute function has been deactivated so that your signal can reach our devices. So, thank you very much. And we'll have the first question by Oliver Suess of Bloomberg.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mr. Vemma. Good morning, Tom. And I would like to know, Mr. Vemma, the comments on the topic that you don't want to have any higher insurance prices and that you don't want to pay, and because that it will probably not so well received in the reinsurance market because we're this reinsurer in Munich Re. Are you sure that this that there would not be any higher prices to pay, and if yes, why would you believe that? And the AAA rating You mentioned this morning in the interview that Allianz, with regard to capitalization, with AAA, it should be assessed with AAA. You said what would be interesting? Would it be interesting for Allianz to try and achieve such a high rating? And my last question is the outlook for 2018. Are you able to say something if you look at the 500 million claim from the catastrophes? If you deduct that, then the 2018 profit margin for operating income would have to be taken upward $500 million to get a feeling of what is going to happen next year. Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Seuss. Of course, the reinsurance agreements. I know for every division and for every region there will be new renewal data, so some will be renewed on 1st of January or April or October. That means this is subject to individual negotiations, but basically I believe that those who is able to say, I have not put any charge on the reinsurance, would be the one who is also having good arguments in order to avoid increases. And practically speaking, just a few years ago, our hurricane limit in the U.S. was reduced down to 200 per event. That's why we have some charge from the reinsurance, and with this burden, we could go back to the old values, and that's why the burden would be zero for the reinsurance. That means, you know, with our capital basis and with our risk leeway, we have a lot of flexibility, and that's why we can be quite relaxed and start any discussions with the reinsurance world. That was the first point. Further to the AAA, I basically mentioned this because of the $2 billion share buyback, which we are well able to afford from our capital situation. The question of a rating is always, would we find even more customers if we were even securer? And now with a double A rating, so we're one of the leading ratings that we have worldwide. I do not believe that we would gain more customers if we were rated AAA. That would mean, you know, that would be rather inefficient to achieve a AAA rating, because then you would have to fulfill a lot of conditions and requirements, and you'd be required to provide capital long-term and very stable, which would be rather negative for our shareholders. And further to 2018, I must say, well, yeah, I just said before, we are on track regarding our 2018 ambitions of reaching these ambitions and fulfilling everything we planned, and that's why the management, the year-end result, can help us to become more concrete with our targets in 2018. But basically, we never talk about that before the year-end has been reached and everything has been concluded. Merci, thank you. Thank you very much. Now, next question from Michael Flemig from Börsen-Zeitung. Yes, Mr. Wemmer, Mr. Atkins, Michael Flemig from Börsen-Zeitung. I have a share buyback question, second the life insurance segment, and further to the outlook 2017. Now, the share buyback program, can you specify why the money is available? You said that because of the solvency rate is so high, but why don't you need the money, or why do you have enough money for what you plan to do? And an additional question, so what about the use of these $2 billion? Are they taken from the pool that is not used for acquisitions, or is this done outside that pool or calculation? Now, the new business margin, you're much higher than the target defined for 2018. So how much can this margin be increased? Has this been matured, and does it go towards 4% or beyond that? And further to the outlook 2017, I mean, that's, you know, looking into the future, but can you give us more specific ideas where you would like to become, where would you like to land? Would it be 77% of the mean value? That means that would mean that you're close to the upper end. Yeah, thank you very much, Mr. Fleming. You know, there are no different pools in our capital management, so that is also one big pot. Banks and insurance companies pay investments, dividends, the share buyback, etc., from their solvency rate. And our solvency quota is above the range that we set ourselves. And so how do we reach the 180 to 220%? If you take that point in the middle, which is 200%, which actually is the target for us, because that covers different crisis scenarios and including accumulated version of the 2008 financial crisis scenario, which we are able to sustain. And above 200, there is another 20 percentage point of additional buffer. And at some point, the buffer goes beyond the buffer. And that is truly very much. And I believe that the management of a balance sheet in the financial sector is always a question that comes from financial discipline, which also includes that you set yourself clear framework conditions. When is there not enough capital? But also the other question, when is there too much capital? And that's why this decision was taken. But this gives us a lot more flexibility for coming acquisitions, if they come. That means we have not limited ourselves to any, you know, interesting acquisitions, so that would be still possible. And liquidity is still there because the capital is in a solvency rate, which is a theoretical calculation. Practically speaking, you would also have to ask, do I get the liquidity that comes along, or is it just book values? And as in liquidity, we are showing a very centrally good picture. That's why we decided the 2 billion should be taken for a share buyback program. The 3% new business margin remains to be our goal. And the level that we have achieved, plus minus some fluctuations, will stay like that. Our target being clearly in the new business, to grow further in new business. And actually, with this target margin of 3% being backed by that, we want to make sure that the business can be grown further organically. And the 2017 outlook, well, you know, the room to maneuver becoming slimmer versus the half year, I mean, that's a matter of course. The third quarter was characterized by the NatCat. That was an extraordinary quarter. Looking at NatCat, so many companies were dropped into the red for the 9 months. And we're miles away from that. So, but when it comes to the final calculation in 2017, of course it has to be reflected. And I think this is going to be the case. And we will have to wait and see where we will end coming out. That depends on whether in the fourth quarter will there be any further NatCat. And there were a few more intensive storm events in Germany recently. And we also will probably have to cover something from the Californian fires. And that we will have to wait what else is happening by the end of the year. And that's why our outlook is somewhat lower just for one bit. But it's really a fine interpretation of looking into the future. Thank you very much. Thank you. Our next question from Olaf Storbeck, Financial Times. Yes, good morning, Mr. Wemmer. Morning, Tom. I have two questions, further to the share buyback program and a question. I would like to better understand why this was made in two steps, one, 2 billion in February, 2 billion now. So you said there was the quota, and then also but there was also the net cash in the third quarter. And what exactly was your motivation not to do 5 billion in February instead of 3 and 2? Well, the Solvency II regimen is not that old yet. So although everyone believes that has been discussed for quite some time, only it started in the 1st of January 2016. So we're in it for the seventh quarter under this highly complex regimen. And there are changes coming in the model, and we also proposed other changes because we have not reflected everything optimally, but also the regulators proposed changes which we implemented, and that's why we received some volatility in the system. So for each new quarter, we gain more confidence in how to deal with the figures, and because it's highly complex what we're interpreting and what we have to analyze, and that's why in February the 5 billion would not have been a good announcement. Now the 3 billion were almost implemented, and we only need a few more weeks. These are automatic share buying programs that we give to banks. It's not that someone sits here at Allianz and decides how many shares are being bought. That's not the case. And that's why the implementation of the 3 billion has almost been completed. And I believe that capital management has to be done proactively, subject to the situation given. And it's also clear signal that in terms of the capitalization, that such a quarter characterized by net cats would not have a major influence on our capital management. We kept on producing profits, and 7 points, or 8 points increase in the solvency ratio means that from a capital perspective, more than 3 billion in the quarter after tax was generated. And the net cats have been deducted already. Thank you for that. And I bet I would like to understand the income situation at PIMCO. You convincingly showed that the business has turned around and that there are major inflows. I haven't fully understood why the income situation is does not really reflect that trend. So it's rather stagnating if you deduct the FX exchange effects. Please, can you highlight on that what is happening at the moment? Simple answer. If we were a company making a balance sheet in dollar, then the PIMCO trend could have been much clearer and simpler. So you always have to count back into dollar because PIMCO is a dollar company. That's one point. And the second point I mentioned that last year in the third quarter, we had to pay extraordinarily high performance fees from the Bravo One fund, which is a closed fund. And if you have a closed fund that you sell And with all the money that you would like to give to the investors, then the performance fees typical for private equity are being settled. So if we calculate the PIMCO story in local currency, in the first quarter we had 470 million profit, second quarter 496, and the third one 527. If this was a standalone dollar company, I would say this is a very good development story, and the performance fees are included in this up and down. And if you take a look, so we had major outflows in the years 14 and 15. There was only a minor amount in 16 left. That means in 2017, the majority of the lost funds of the year 2015 were taken back. And so that was extraordinarily fast recovery, and I believe this is a very good basis for the future. Thank you. And our next question from Alexander Hübner, Thomson Reuters.
Good morning, Mr. Wemmer. Hello, Tom. I do have two questions. One regarding the share buyback program. I was a little astonished, to be honest, that you'd be starting another one, because Mr. Bethe once spoke about being adverse to a certain automatism that continued share buybacks should happen. So could you explain to this? Has he changed his opinion, or was he outvoted by you on the board? Or, and the second point, which I didn't understand, you said you took down your outlook a bit for the overall year. I didn't understand that completely, because you say you're in the upper end of the range of 10.3 to 11.3, or do we have to interpret this that you say within the upper half and not at the upper end of the range? Or so maybe you could explain this a bit. Exactly, Mr. Hübner, that is exactly the slight difference between upper half and upper end of the range, because we need to see what the and your calculations of natural catastrophes will bring, because we are in a business that's affected by natural catastrophes, and we cannot withstand that all without any fact. We need to take this into our balance sheet as it happens, and that's why the third quarter is weaker than the previous quarters, and the fourth quarter remains to be seen what will come, you know. And but nevertheless, I believe we could show convincingly that we have a strong underlying base, a strong underlying trend. But on top of these underlying trends, you then have the daily volatilities in the insurance business, in smaller losses there, offset with the size of the portfolio. But single events like these have to be withstood. Now, a share buyback program is not something that will become an automatic repeat over the years. And I believe, and here I agree absolutely with Mr. Bethe, that in the current situation of when it comes to our capital base, our liquidity base, and our belief in the positive future of our company, that against this backdrop, a further share buyback program has been exactly the right decision. That was no long-term planning we had on this, but it was an ad hoc decision based on the strong capital figures of the third quarter. Okay, may I add a follow-up question? Yeah. Should this lead us to any conclusions regarding the dividend that might go up, go down, or anything compared to the previous year? So will you have more money available for the dividend? Or, well, our dividend will always be 50% of the net income, the net shareholders.
income. That's our formula, and I don't think we will deviate from this formula in any way. And should the profit be too small, because also Allianz cannot walk on water, should the profit get too low, then we have the ratchet, so then the previous year's dividend would continue to be paid. But that is not, that's more a theoretical consideration at this point. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much, and we'll take the next question of Heike Jaberg of Tagesspiegel. Good morning from Berlin. I have three questions to you. First on the share buyback. So the decision to do that might have been linked with the Chinese interest that we heard about of buying Allianz shares. Then life insurance, General and Ergo, taking decisions, but how bad are they for the business and the life insurance and the third part, the Paradise Papers? What can we expect to find out about Allianz regarding Allianz, these Paradise Papers? Okay, Ms. Jarberg, our share buyback in China, from my point of view, there is no connection between those. I did not recommend my children to learn to take any Mandarin courses or anything, so I believe that there is no link between those two elements. And I don't know, by the way, where the rumors came from. We are a 90 billion euro company, and if you want to take over such a company, then you would certainly have to pay a huge premium in the market. And based on our own weight, I believe we are quite well protected from this point of view. And I really don't have any idea how this topic has come up. Then life insurance, you're mentioning an important point here. We are, we clearly stand by our life insurance in the topic of runoff, as you can see in our growth figures, is, I mean, this is a clear documentation of the fact that we aim for something completely different and that we generate good revenues for our customers in addition. And the topic that others do, the runoff, is that an issue for the trust of customers? Yes, I think that's a point that the industry needs to take care of, that those two topics won't be intertwined with each other, because me personally, I don't believe that customers will lose anything if a company is put into the runoff, and if the runoff happens under the control of BaFin and is done in a cautious way, then I don't think this will have any effects for the customers. Should remain neutral and in some cases even slightly positive. And I believe here in there's sometimes a misconception in the public opinion, but of course you're right. For the life insurance industry, it needs to make sure how to improve communication in this regard and not damage the product by bad news. Paradise Papers. Well, yeah. In the hurricanes, we had to pay in that for many damaged houses in two of these paradises, because the French overseas islands, St. Bart and Guadeloupe, were strongly affected by two catastrophes. So there were huge damages there and losses. That was a large part of our natural catastrophe losses, just as well as Puerto Rico. But other than that, I can't see much connection between Allianz and Paradise Papers. When it comes to our tax rate, in all those countries which have
tax rates around 30%, and our tax rate as a group reflects that. It's always around 30%. This quarter was slightly lower because there were certain tax provisions that were released after we settled ongoing processes, and therefore it's a little lower than the 30%, but other than that, I think we are a good corporate citizen, which is also reflected in the Dow Jones Sustainability Index, by the way, where the disclosure for tax payments is also one of the main points of analysis. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and we have the next question of Herbert Fromme of Süddeutsche Zeitung.
Good morning.
AGCS combined below 100 that you mentioned. Could you give us a figure on that? And then regarding the share buyback, I've understood that you say we had the money and what should you do with this, but Mr. Bäte for a long time stated that you would need the money for a new business development. And the question is whether this is not some kind of sweet poison now that you've done it the first and the second time. If you don't repeat the share buyback next year, then the analysts will be up in arms. So have you come onto a permanent buyback thread with this track with this? And then the runoff topic, I think Allianz never excluded a runoff for Germany. Mr. Bäte said several times that he could imagine this. And the German Allianz then said this wasn't meant for Germany, but as a group you haven't excluded this, or have I missed something? And the last question, do I remember correctly that this is your last phone conference as the Allianz CFO, and that we will need to talk English in the future on this occasion? Okay, let me start with the last question. That is quite easy to answer. For me personally, it is the last quarterly press conference. Julia could, of course, also do the conference in Italian if you prefer that, but he also talks German excellently, and I think the conference will continue to be performed in German, and if there are any misunderstandings, then we go switch into Italian. Now, is a share buyback program a sweet poison? Well, I think it's rather proof that we've shown that we can grow our life health business without having to consume additional capital. And if we continue the current trend, the life business will continue to release shareholders' equity over the years, generating more than it can eat up through organic growth. And I think this is one of the most important points here. But it also shows the discipline. I mean, using the money, spending the money for any acquisitions of medium quality wouldn't be a good solution either, I think. But I also believe if you're patient, there will be acquisition opportunities, but acquisitions can be forced in one quarter, and people have put themselves under pressure in this regard and believe they now have to do the acquisition of the year. This is the wrong approach, the completely wrong approach from my point of view. And I think what we show here is discipline, and we don't become a slave of one direction, but we can react to the opportunities that come up. And it's also a clear signal that our PNC businesses have enough of a capital base that they don't need any fresh capital even after such hurricane damages or major catastrophes. And I think this also gives customers a clear signal that they have the right company with Allianz. So there are many elements that play into that, and we can react flexibly. Now, AGCS
should be net around 94 in outside the US.
Okay, thank you, but coming to the share buyback, what would happen if you don't do another share buyback next year?
Poof.
Well, then we will certainly have a good explanation of what else we will do with the money.
Could also be that the solvency ratio decreases.
So we're currently in a stable phase. The financial markets currently seem to muddle through the large central banks. Have expanded the QE programs longer than anyone had expected, and I mean, we always have to react to the financial background, to the situation. We have our buffers, but the world can change so quickly and turn around so quickly that the large buffer turns into a relatively small buffer, and then you have to react to this spontaneously, and this is exactly how we handle the whole situation.
Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you, and we have the next question by Stefan Weyhoff, DPA.
Good morning, Mr. Wemmer.
Hello, Tom.
I don't have that much in addition, but when we look at 2018 and the share buyback, that always fits quite well, that you think, if I have some... go and the profit doesn't increase that much. With this, I can lower the, when the share price doesn't increase in line, then I'll lower the number of stocks. So how, and how far would that drive the percentage-wise, the result per share if the, it wouldn't be sufficient otherwise for the 2017 goal?
In the past years, ever since we've set up the EPS goal, we've always communicated that the 5% earnings per share will be reached by a good half of organic growth and the other half through capital measures. And capital measures include both acquisitions or share buybacks. Both have the same positive effect on an EPS target, and therefore they can be seen as synonymous, and share buyback of 2 billion shares with 90 million market capitalization, this is a good 2%, so this should also be reflected in the EPS once the program has been implemented and EPS calculation is a rolling calculation for 12 months. So it will take some time for this to be reflected, but then it will have a good 2% of effect on the EPS, that's correct. And the last program that we've implemented was when the stock price was even a little lower, so the effect was a little higher, between 3 and 4%.
Okay, and this is one of the backgrounds of the share buyback, to say, let's drive up the EPS this way, or...
was it just the fact that you had too much capital, basically?
Well, instead of buying back shares, you could also have a special dividend, but then this would not influence the earnings per share, so our share buyback program is our preferred solution because it has a long-term effect on the earnings per share. That is reasonable, I'd say. I mean, it'd be irrational to do it differently, you know. It's not that we have to do it to reach a target. It's quite the other way around. It supports the target, and overachieving targets is always nice and fun to do.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, and we'll have our last question for today by Mirko Reitke of Plato Brief.
Good morning. I have two or three questions, and maybe you could
comment again. There were some rumors on Mr. Lopez gone. Maybe you could explain this a bit and what's led to that. And then I'd like to know whether there was a specific reason for the increase of the cost-income ratio at PIMCO, excluding restructuring costs, and whether you need to become active there or whether this was just due to the business picking up again. And then you also said something I thought was interesting regarding a runoff. Why could this even be slightly positive for customers? You would need to explain this to me. I mean, the concerns go into another direction. And the last point, the interest rate turnaround, from your point of view, if I've understood you correctly, seems to be pushed back a little. Other houses reduced the maturities of their capital investments to a certain degree. And I don't know whether Allianz has done anything of this nature. Okay, there's something that comes to my mind. Mr. Fromme didn't wait for my answer on the runoff in Europe. I forgot this. So we don't have any plans to turn any business in Europe into runoff. 2 years ago, we had communicated that if the 10% ROE couldn't be reached in any life OE, then we would take measures such as the sale and others into consideration, and that was the point where we also were talking about the life business. We then sold Korea and sold part of our portfolio in Taiwan, but it's the sale of a portfolio into an active company, so runoff hasn't happened and hasn't been planned in any way for anywhere. This was an answer I forgot to give Mr. Fromme in all the joy of the around the share buyback program. So coming to Mr. Radka's questions. Mr. Knopf, just as we communicated, asked us for health reasons to have an early cancellation of his contract at the end of the year, and that is what we accepted, and we are sad about the situation, but you need to take into account the personal developments and personal preferences, and that is why the situation is as it is. The cost-income ratio at PIMCO is slightly higher because we have some one-off expenses which were recognized in the third quarter, but we're well on track regarding our trend of below 60, and I think in the third quarter we had 58.3. So that is clearly better than a target for the cost income ratio. And if we take out the performance fees, we've seen an improvement on a quarterly basis, so we don't need to be concerned about this. Now the interest rate turnaround. Well, two answers. Well, over the past years, I think I've always said that the interest rate recovery would need some time to happen, and even if the ECB would stop expanding its balance sheet next year, there will still be the renewal of ending bonds. So when if ever the balance sheet of the ECB will start to shrink, there are no statements of the ECB regarding that whatsoever, and I think this will take quite some time. Then the important reference interest rates for banks, when will they come back to zero instead of the minus 0.35 percentage points? This will also still take some time. Now, should a life insurer therefore reduce maturities to hope for higher interest rates from a technical point of view? Well, from my simple financial view, calculations like these will always be negative, and just hoping for something is negative management from my point of view. To get into interest rate bets is not the job of a life insurer. And if you think you need to bet, then you should go to a bookmaker and what can a runoff be? Next question. Be positive for customers. Well, because the professional runoff managers take a very close look at costs in a highly professional way. And in Germany, cost surpluses are being handed out to customers like interest rate surpluses and mortality profits according to strict formulas. In one or the other case, this could even be positive for customers. It will at least be neutral, could even be positive, but that depends on the individual situation. So it was more of a general remark without any reference to any specific companies. Thank you very much, Mr. Wemmer. Before we close our call of today, we would like to remind you that this is the last time that Mr. Wemmer will do the quarterly press conference, and therefore we would like to thank him for many quarters and would like to thank you for many quarters of great cooperation. Mr. Wemmer, yeah, I would like to also to thank you for your inspiring questions all of the time, and maybe I'll meet one or the other of you at other occasions in the future. So enjoy the rest of the Friday. Enjoy your weekend. Thank you and goodbye. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This closes today's conference. We would like to thank you for your participation and wish you a nice remainder of the day. Thank you.